cool. So this is part two, which was supposed to be the next week, but it's now, I think, about almost 2 months later.
Right. Hey, maybe that's better, you know.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure myself. We had to cut part one short because of somebody just pitching up at my front door, and we were getting into some really cool things. So I was a bit bummed about that. But anyway, here we are. And I literally want to try and pick up with where we left off, because we were talking about some of the things you were going through, you know, building your plugin and redeveloping your plugin. And there was the story about the plumber who, you know, rang the doorbell and it caused some things to happen in your life. And the last message that you sent me was, we were talking about luck. I was mentioning Jason Roberts' luck surface area. So would you like to dig into that a little bit and tell me what you were gonna share with us?
Sure. And of course, at this point, I've no recollection whatsoever what the context for that was. But broadly speaking, it is a concept that I really like, which is putting yourself out there. The concept was luck surface area. So the more you put yourself out there, the more likely you are to collect luck, right? You can't control luck, but there are things you can do to make it more likely to happen to you, I guess.
Okay. I don't remember the context. No, well, the context we were talking, you know, we were talking about how you use your mastermind and people that you talk to, and you know, you were worrying about the React thing, and then somebody said, "But why React?" And it made you think about it a different way. And I find that interesting. So, is this concept of luck surface area something that you've read about, or is it something that's copyright Corey Maas? Or
oh no, not me at all. It's Jason Roberts from the TechZing podcast. Sort of coined the phrase probably 5-6 years ago at this point. And, you know, I don't think it's a well-known phrase, but it's a concept that I really liked and embraced. So yeah, in that context, we were talking about basically, I think having a support group, having a support network around you. So as you're bopping along, struggling with business, because everybody struggles with business, setting up these support networks, having people around you, having regular check-ins, having groups of people who know your situation, who you can check in with regularly, run things by. And if they're honest with you, then you're more likely to get out of the relationship. And you know, with a mastermind group, it's great because you give back as well. So they benefit from your experience, you benefit from theirs. But like I guess the context of what we were talking about then with the plumber showing up and all that is, you know, you never know when lightning's going to hit, but it's more likely to hit if you are regularly having conversations, check-ins, if you've got people around you, surround yourself with smart people that you can run ideas by, or, you know, who are going to challenge you. And I think that's really important.
That is very important and very interesting, because I've never thought about it or sort of looked at it from this concept of luck surface area. And this is also not something that I made up. This is something that I watched. There was a movie a while ago, which I don't recommend people watch if they're of a certain frame of mind. I don't know if I believe in everything that this movie talks about, but I certainly do believe in the concepts of, you know, what you put out will come back to you. The movie is called The Secret. And they talk about, one of the things that they talk about in the movie is sort of visualization. So this idea of, you know, if you want a certain type of car, then imagine yourself sitting in the car, driving the car, the feel of the car. I don't know if I take it that far, but it reminds me of that story of Jim Carrey, who wrote that, I think it was $1 million check that he wrote for himself when he was at the worst stage of his life. And something like 10 years later, he was able to cash that check.
Oh, nice.
There's a story about it. I'll find it and hook it up in the show notes, but it definitely sort of ties in with my ideas and my concepts of, you know, what you put out is what you will get back. And I think this luck surface area ties into it as well. You know, the more you're putting yourself out there, the more you're communicating with people. I went through a stage, in my first year of freelancing where I kind of very much almost stuck myself in a box and didn't really talk to a lot of people, spoke to maybe one or two people, but they weren't really sort of like-minded. And I ended up going down a very deep, dark hole. and ended up sort of killing myself to try and achieve goals. And when I stepped back from that and changed the way I do things and started, and the real sort of trigger for me was when I started interacting with the local WordPress community. Mm-hmm. And I got involved in the meetup and I actually started co-organizing the meetup and I got more involved with WordCamps. Then my life turned around because suddenly I was now interacting with all these different people, different ways of thinking, different ways of looking at things. You know, I met somebody who I now consider a friend. He works automatic. He's the co-organizer of the WordPress.
He was an enemy when you first started, right?
No. Funny enough, he was just somebody that I knew. You know, I'd met him at the first WordCamp that I went to and we were just sort of online acquaintances, but now we regularly talk. And he just, because of what he does, he's a full-time sponsored community team member. So he's dealing with WordCamps and meetups all the time as part of his job. And he just helped me really stop and think about seeing other people's points of view when I'm dealing with something difficult. And that's something I didn't do very well. So just interacting with him on that point of view has changed the way I deal with people and handle people. And so therefore it's changed the way I do what I do. So, and because of those connections...
I was just going to say, I think, you know, one of the things that changed for me, it sounds like changed for you as well, is also being receptive. Like there's definitely a timing element here, which is, you know, you think to yourself, I've got to put myself in a box. That must be how everybody gets this stuff done. Or I'm a developer, so, you know, I'm going to put my head down and, you know, bang out the perfect code, which will build the perfect product. And then, you know, I can cash that $1 million check. But changing or having the mindset. And I remember, you know, and early on when I was starting out, both as a musician and an artist and a developer, excuse me. I was very stubborn. I was very single-minded. I thought that there was one true way and I knew that one true way. And so I'm sure there was a lot of good advice that went in one ear and out the other. And I wasn't able to hear it. For me, definitely there was an element of humbleness that had to creep in to say, I do not have all the answers. And now I'm happy to say I have very few of the answers. I'm happy to say that because I'm able to hear the advice of other people. It's funny that you talk about putting yourself out there and that kind of thing. So one of the things that's happened between the last time we spoke and now is going to a couple of WordCamps. I usually go to 5 or 6 every year. But talking about having the visualization element, I hadn't made the connection until just now, but one of the things that I've just recently been able to start doing is instead of going to WordCamps or any other events and just kind of rolling in and going, well, we'll see what happens and I'll meet some nice people. And, you know, I'm now going in with some very clear intentions, which, you know, some of them happen, some of them don't. But I learned actually from a friend of mine, Sam Brody, who's a little less extroverted than I am. And so, you know, only wants to do so many of these events and whatnot. But so I saw him last year at Nashville going up to very specific people to have very specific conversations. So I pulled him aside afterwards and he's like, yeah, you know, I've only got so much energy, and so much attention span. And of course this was, you know, WordCamp US. So there are thousands of people. So there's only so much bandwidth, you know, anybody has. And so he said, I came in and I basically had made a list of half a dozen people that I wanted to have very specific conversations with. So if I get half of that done, then I know I've made progress. And it was something that I'd really been struggling with. I realized that a lot of the time I was rolling into these events and then I'd come away and I'd go, well, I, you know, tasted some nice beer and had some nice conversations, but what did I get out of it? Like all the travel and all the time that I wasn't writing code. And so, you know, even this weekend, I was at WordCamp Boston, and I went in going, okay, I want to talk to, you know, these two or three people, ideally about these topics, obviously. And then some of the sponsors, like finding out what kind of partnership programs they have, and just, you know, seeking out very specific opportunities. And so maybe that's kind of the less ethereal version of visualization, right? Where just having a plan, having a focus, knowing what you're trying to get out of something, I think for me has been bringing things more into focus.
No, that's super important. I mean, it's kind of interesting that we're talking about this now, because when I was at that dark place in my life, I literally, it was a situation where I was doing something that was kind of too far outside of my wheelhouse that I would be comfortable to do it. And so I was kind of killing myself to learn and grow very quickly. And I was, you know, pushing way too many late nights and then waking up early to take the kids to school and all that kind of thing. And I vividly remember waking up that morning and just feeling like death. You know, like, remember when you were 21 and used to go out drinking until sunrise? That's how I felt.
21. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, but that's how I felt. And I sat down that morning and I wrote a blog post called Remembering Why. And that was my visualization. That was me saying, why did I get into this? What do I want to do? And I listed three things that are sort of the primary reasons why I got into this. It actually turned out to be one thing, but in three areas. And that was the day that I decided from here on in, I'm going to do everything that I can to make those three things happen, or those three aspects happen. And I'm happy to say, this was about just short of 2 years ago, I'm happy to say that I'm now doing those three things.
Well done.
Because I made that decision and I wrote it down and I committed to an ideal, and because it's in your head and you're thinking about it and you're visualizing, well, what would I do and how would I get about it and all that kind of thing. And you're putting yourself out there and you're talking to people, it does come in. So it's something that I think if somebody had to come to me today, and this is a question that I'm going to be asking you later, but I'll answer my own one. I've never answered it on the podcast, but my question that I ask people towards the end of the podcast is, if you could go back in time and tell yourself one thing, what would it be? And my thing that I would want to tell myself is to stop living in your own little sphere, because I tend to do that way too much. And to get out there and talk to people and get input from others, even if it's not with specific focus, but with specific sort of, I want to talk to some people about some things, or I just want to talk to people, or I want to bounce ideas off people, because just like with your plumber story, you know, or whatever the case is, ideas and sparks can come from anywhere.
Well, it's important to point out where you live. Mm. And I, you know, the rest of the world has this perception that, you know, there is a small community down there. I know it's huge, but it's not as big as the US, let's say, right? Like where I live, part of the reason I go to half a dozen WordCamps is because there are literally, I think, 8 within a 4-hour drive of me.
Wow.
So I've got a lot of opportunity to see a lot of people, you know, and going to WordCamp US is, you know, is a trip, but is doable. You live, or your community is a lot more isolated from the rest of the sort of the bigger, well-established communities. Mm. But even you can get out of the house, can find some local people, you know, and I think that's important to point out. It doesn't, okay, if you truly live on top of a mountain or something, then that's on you. But, you know, even this, a small group of people around you can make all the difference.
Absolutely. No, that's so true. Cool. I kind of want to swing us back now back to more sort of, I mean, this is all good stuff, but this is a very much sort of WordPress and developer focused podcast.
It's supposed to be, yes.
So as far as I know, you might have to correct me if I'm wrong here, but when we last spoke, you were in the process and you had a launch date for your plugin. And from what I saw on Twitter, you're now in beta. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
And how's that going?
Pretty well. So it's been an interesting journey. Of course, it's, you know, it's always going to be interesting. Nothing ever happens exactly as planned. But it's been good. What's challenging, let's get back to some developer speak now, is of course, how do you roll out a beta? And how do you roll out a beta in the very unique pattern that is WordPress and WordPress plugins? So how do you I followed the what I'd seen NinjaForms do, where they embedded the new version inside of the old version, and then said, you know, when you're ready, it basically, you know, it sort of slowly leaked it that everybody already has the new version on their WordPress install. It's up to them when they want to kind of flip the switch. And so where we started is creating a little flow inside of the plugin that lets a user switch and try version 3, but with a click of a button, they can switch back to version 2 with no risk. Because one of the things that I've been taking more and more seriously is just how many businesses are relying on my plugin. And it hurts me deep inside every time I get a report. It doesn't happen often, but enough that it sticks in my mind that people write in and go, well, you know, that latest update broke my install, or, you know, or there's suddenly this new bug and we lost a few hours of work or whatever it is. You know, and that just can't, it's always going to happen. It's inevitable. It's software. But it quote unquote can't happen, right? It's so important to me that I don't disrupt people's lives and people's work, who are, you know, awesome enough to be using my plugin. So it took me a little while, honestly, to sort of get that, settled in my head, because there's a internal conflict for me, at least, where my background, I think, as we talked about last time a little bit, is like building MVPs and cranking out products very quickly and prototype and rapid iteration. The problem there, of course, is at some point, if you double down on a product, you have to slow down, pump the brakes, start thinking about the consequences instead of just another new feature. Oh, that's a great idea. Cool. Bang, bang, bang. You know, and taking the time to introduce proper testing and that kind of thing so that there's less risk. And so that's one of the things that I've been really trying to balance. And with this release, I was really nervous about it until I realized, okay, what I want to do is make sure it's a very safe transition. And then basically dialed it back, said, you know, it's made a nice, easy flow. And so the next step is going to be data migration. So it's like, okay, you've now tried version 3, you're happy with it. Click a button, we can port your data over. There's not going to be a continuous sync between the data, but you could now conceivably move forward with version 3 for the rest of time. But again, you can switch back to version 2 and you'll lose your changes, but better that than nothing, right? And so trying to sort of map out these baby steps, and then at some point version 3 will become the default and everybody will move forward together, holding hands and singing happy songs, you know, dancing a jig, whatever. But again, you know, planning out this slow, gradual process. So yeah, originally we had talked about July 5th being like the release date. We're going to, you know, throw everybody over the wall and hope. And I wasn't okay with that, but not in a like, you know, I'm generally nervous about it, or, oh, well, that's going to be a crappy week because there'll be lots of bugs. I was not okay with it deep down. And it was that kind of thinking that I had to sort of switch in my head of, oh, right. Like there, I don't know if I told this story, but we just recently introduced a follow-up email on the day that somebody purchases the pro version. We ask them, you know, why did you buy today? Which is a crucial piece of information that I'd been lacking. Generally speaking, I know how people are using the plugin, but it was, why did you buy this plugin today? And the first email I got back was, hey, Corey, I'm working with a team in Scotland. We're trying to build a rocket. And we're using your plugin to plan the manufacturing and da 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 da. And of course, I'm jumping up and down going, that is the coolest thing I have ever heard in my life. And then again, starting to think about this new way of looking at it, I'm like, oh my Lord, you know, I need to tread very carefully. There are people building rockets using my plugin. I need to make sure that nothing goes wrong, especially on launch day, you know? So again, it just a bit of a change in thinking. So the beta got released couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, and we're now collecting bugs, iterating pretty quickly, fixing some things. and then hoping within the next month or two. But at this point, I'm not putting a deadline on it. It's the, you know, when we feel like the thing is rock solid and we're ready to move on, then we will officially release it. You know, somewhere in the middle, again, offering that data migration so that people who are ready can start using it every day, because people are excited. It's really, really cool. Got an email this morning of somebody saying, yeah, version 3 is amazing. You know, let's go. So still in a transition over the next few months, and then we can leave it behind us.
Awesome. And so interesting question that comes out of that process. Did you decide early on that you were going to release it in this sort of, you know, version 3 within current version 2 so that people could switch? Or was that something that you decided closer to the time and you had to make some sort of drastic infrastructure changes or code changes to accommodate?
A little of both. So you know, bopping along, there was the meta question of how are we going to get this out there? And a few months before the release, I decided, you know, I'd sort of had Ninja Forms in the back of my mind. There was also the possibility of there are technically ways within the plugin directory to say, well, trunk, AKA version 2 is the stable version, but there are these other branches. But then I'm now relying on people to understand that. And some of my users are technical and some of them are not. And I don't want to have to rely on that. That's not fair. So decided to do this, and it was surprisingly straightforward to do. I'm pleased to report. And if anybody wants to see how I'm doing it, which is by no means graceful, but I only need the code for a few months, so it's good enough. But if anybody wants to try it now, you know, go look at GitHub right now. You can just see that there's basically a check for a version, you know, before instantiating the initial class. And so it can say, go to version 3 or use version 2. And then the flow, I hadn't thought of this, but maybe I'll actually do a little blog post about it. So there's screenshots sort of for the sake of history of how we decided to do this. Originally, there was a button, you're now using version 3. There was a button, you're now using version 2. But somebody suggested to, again, slow it down a little. And so now there is a interstitial page, I think that's the right word, where, you know, learn more about version 3. And then we talk about version 3. Well, here are the advantages, but please understand this is a beta, back up your database. Here's what to expect. We, you know, please send us feedback and bug reports, because that's why we're doing this. Okay, now switch. And then again, there's a big prominent button that does let you switch back. But I think managing expectations has honestly saved us a lot of grief.
Awesome. That's very interesting. The one other question I had about that, and I mean, I don't know how, in terms of size, how big the plugin was to begin with, but did you not have concerns about users now suddenly having a double the size plugin to have to update with, or was that not a major issue?
I'm not terribly concerned. Since we're dealing largely with web servers downloading plugins, if it goes from 5 megs to 10 megs, I mean, by all means, that's huge, but we're not talking gigs. So I wasn't overly worried about it.
Fair enough. No, absolutely. Fair enough. Cool. So would you say then, I mean, if you launched a couple of weeks ago, if you look forward, if and when you release version 4, do you think that, or at least let's change that. What have you learned, or what would you like to improve, or what would you do differently the next big version update that you may or may not do in the future?
I think definitely limiting deadlines, getting more help early on, starting to chip away at it sooner. And then, you know, telling my plumber story and all that, I think letting myself off the hook for changing too much all at once. Nice coincidence. I was listening to Pippin Williamson talking about the new version of EDD that they're putting out on the Mastermind FM podcast, driving 4 hours across Massachusetts, where I had lots of time to listen to podcasts. But they've been slowly upgrading changing their data schema, you know, because he, like I, sorry, I, like he, let's get that in the right order, you know, many years ago, 7 years ago or something, he started EDD and made a number of technical decisions based on the knowledge that he had at the time, and then also what was generally considered best practices. And I think he's paid for it ever since, and he knows that. I don't think I'm putting words in his mouth. I did the same thing, and it was, in fact, when I first built Kanban, all of the cards were posts. And thankfully, he and Brad Tenard were putting out post status. No, we're putting out Apply Filters, their podcast at the time. And already within, I don't know, 30 episodes, at least three or four of them, Pippin said, man, I wish I hadn't put my data in the post table. And I'm going, oh, crap. You know, so even though I only had like 50 users at the time, I wrote a migration script and transferred everything over to custom tables. You know, so there's an example, right? We all grow and change. And so the story I was relating was, so Pippin said that they've now taken a few years to migrate, be slowly migrating EDD into custom tables, little bits of data where it made sense and whatnot. But when they stopped and looked at it, they were like, it's going to be another 6 years before we're done with this. We just can't, it's holding us back too much. And so they just said, we're just going to take 3 months, just get it done. It's going to be misery, but then it'll be behind us. And that was very reassuring to me, given that I'm already on that same path. And coincidentally, his is a version 3, mine is a version 3. So I'm, you know, I'm with him in spirit. But it's setting myself up for the future. I feel a lot better about, I'm generally a lot more confident, you know, 3 more years of WordPress development. What I didn't give myself credit with at the time, however you say that sentence, is, you know, I had a long history of building apps, and I know about, you know, database optimization. I know some of the better ways to do things, but I was still fairly new in sort of this deep dive of WordPress. And so I was trying to do things the WordPressy way. Well, generally you should, that's not a bad idea, but having enough confidence to sort of accept or reject as you go along, instead of blindly accepting everything that that people are telling you or that you're reading that is like a best practice or whatever. Definitely something that I'll pay more attention to in the future.
Cool. That's nice to know. So this is something that happened fairly recently, but I've subscribed to Indie Hackers, and you know, I get the regular mail of whatever's been going on and the daily updates and whatever. And there was a very interesting one, and I'm always, whenever I see these articles about, you know, what tech should you use and all that kind of thing, I'm always interested to read them. So the article is, it's a round table that says, what tech should you use in 2018? And I'm scrolling through and I'm reading. And suddenly I see a name that I recognize. And there's Corey talking about, you know, the stack that he uses. So how did that come about?
Indie Hackers just crossed my desk a few years ago, fairly early when it started. And so I volunteered to interview myself, which is their format, on there. And so I've been part of that network almost since the beginning. But it's actually one of those nice, again, luck surface area. I'm fairly active in a number of online micropreneur, or solopreneur communities. And so I see a lot of these new sites that pop up. You know, I wasn't on Product Hunt early on. Well, I guess I was, but with different products. But, you know, seeing these opportunities present themselves and then being able to jump on them has definitely helped. I mean, that was the last app that I had any success with. I built it a weekend, and I sent it out to a little, again, sort of solopreneur online community that I was part of. And that's how I got all my first feedback, which then led me to, you know, I just was blindly emailing, but it was, Lifehacker hadn't quite gone through the roof like it has since. And so I sent them an email saying, hey, I built this cool little thing. Maybe you guys should write about it. 6 weeks later, they did. And then even with Kanban, I was a member of the Advanced WordPress community on Facebook, and I posted there. And but you know, before even really fleshing this thing out, I wrote on there, you know, hey, if this interests you as an idea, a Kanban board built into your WordPress admin, you know, join my beta list. And I got, you know, 80 or 100 subscribers before they shut me down, because you're not supposed to ask that on that group. But it, you know, putting yourself out there and being part of these communities. And I like to think that a lot of the reason I got those kinds of signups or those kinds of reactions was because at least once or twice a week, I'm signing in and answering other people's questions or giving them feedback, that kind of thing.
Interesting. No, that's very interesting. Cool. Awesome.
One of the things that I actually wanted to point out about that article that I thought was really interesting was, usually I am the voice in the wilderness advocating for WordPress. And there were, out of the 10 or 12 responses that were on there, three of them mentioned WordPress, which is very different, you know, because WordPress is very demonized, especially in, you know, web app or more sort of deep developer communities. And Indie Hacker is no exception. Usually, not necessarily that people are bad mouthing it, but it's not referenced very often. And in that article, I guess, or again, a few people, what, you know, one was a WordPress product, but that was not built on WordPress. Another was an app that was built on WordPress. And then here I was talking about building a plugin. It was really cool. That was really satisfying.
I did notice that, and I found that very cool as well. And obviously, you know, if you, and I'll link up to the article in the show notes, but you start off and it's, you know, things like React and Ruby on Rails and all, you know, all the new current stuff. And then suddenly there's, as you say, all these WordPress products. So I really found that interesting. So on the topic of WordPress, let's divert the podcast off to WordPress territory now. I like to talk to other people about WordPress, about what's good about it, what's bad about it. I like to have honest conversations with people about WordPress, because I kind of got into WordPress as a developer fairly late in my career, and I immediately saw the pros and cons. But to me, the pros outweighed the cons, and that's one of the reasons why I chose to sort of focus on WordPress. But if you had to meet somebody who had never used WordPress before in their lives, and you could only give them one reason why they should consider using WordPress, what would that reason be and why?
It 100% depends on the person. What is their objective?
Okay, so their objective is, good question. Well,
let me give you a few scenarios, right?
Okay.
Because I do come across a lot of different people, a lot of walks of life. And this is one of the reasons that I love going to WordCamps, is it doesn't only attract WordPress nerds like you and I. I even this weekend met somebody, and almost inevitably I meet one of these people, and I love meeting these people almost more than, you know, rubbing elbows with nerds or other WordPress rock stars who have podcasts or whatever. And this is because WordCamps are $20. You know, there's no reason not to go. So inevitably there's this person who's comes up to you or as you're chatting, they say, you know, I have a website. I guess it's on WordPress. My nephew set it up or whatever. So I thought I'd come learn something. And that's just so cool, you know? And so the guy that I met this weekend runs a party supply website. Looked like focused mostly on balloons, which is kind of cool. Doesn't know much about WordPress, doesn't know much about tech. It's an e-commerce site, right? And so, you know, talking to him, I mean, he's already set up, but let's say I met him in the street, I'd say, well, you know, you've got WooCommerce on top of WordPress, but here's a platform that makes it really easy to sell stuff without the overhead, the costs, and it doesn't lock you in like other platforms do, right? So there's e-commerce. I've started ranting and raving to a lot of friends of mine who are trying to build software products and advocating for how WordPress solves a lot of the basic problems, you know, user flow, registration, admin views, common data schema, all these advantages that make WordPress surprisingly good for building web apps, obviously depending on the web app. If you're trying to build, you know, something that's API heavy, not such a great candidate. But if you're trying to build an app, a simple web app that people sign into, you know, and have a dashboard and they want to, you know, manage recipes or whatever it is, it's great. It's great. It saves you, you know, it takes care of the first 80%. And it's a common platform, so it's easy to find developers so that as it needs to grow with you, you can hire other people, they can step in and immediately have some idea of what you're doing. So there's another use case. You know, both of my folks have blogs, essentially. My dad for doing tree research, my mom for promoting the stained glass work that she does as an artist. Dead simple. It took me 15 minutes to set up each of their websites. My dad actually signs into his. My mom doesn't bother, but so when she needs a change, again, I jump in, I can make changes. So, you know, different advantages for different people, but as a platform, it's grown in such a way that it meets a lot of the needs for a lot of the use cases for, you know, having a presence online.
No, absolutely. And then if we look at it from, so this is specifically looking at it from a developer point of view. So as somebody who builds applications with WordPress as a base, in your opinion, and this is very much your opinion, so don't feel like you can't say what you do or don't want to say.
No, this is the truth. Everything I'm about to say is total, absolute truth.
Fake news. What is, to you at least, what is the biggest positive thing about developing with WordPress?
There are very established patterns. And at this point, with, you know, 25-30% of the web, with all of these different communities that overlap, all of these developers that have doubled down on WordPress, every problem has been solved. And that's the biggest advantage. If you Google for it, as long as you can figure out what words they use to describe the problem, because I've seen this, you know, being a web developer for about 20 years, there's technology comes along and first you've got to get adoption. But the second stage of that is you've got to get enough people that have bought into it, that they start writing about it and talking about it. Because that's really what doubles adoption, right? Because there are a lot of those first adopters that are willing to muddle through, that are willing to look at undocumented code and figure out how to make it happen. And you might have a slow, steady growth. But when those people start talking about how they've solved all the problems so that the next people that come, group of people that come along can get in that much easier or have to try that much less hard. That was an awful sentence. They're gonna get in quicker. They're gonna get in faster, and they're gonna start solving the harder problems sooner. And so that's one of the biggest advantages from a tech standpoint, from a developer standpoint, is also you've got, because there's an emphasis on UI, which isn't great, but it's there and it's usable and it's robust. You've got a lot of, you know, I think the general phrase now is super admin, right? A non-developer, but a person who can get really far with WordPress from clicking around the admin and changing settings, or they know certain themes very, very well with lots of options, that kind of thing. They've solved all these problems, you know? And so you don't, even beyond developers, you've got just users, and again, all of those problems are solved and documented too. It takes a little bit of Googling, or you have to join a community and then have the guts to post and say, you know, I'm a noob, or I must be dumb, or I haven't had my coffee yet. How do I solve this problem? You've got this great community of people happy to jump in most of the time, you know, and answer your questions for you. So it's really that, you know, the possibilities are endless. Technically speaking, you know, but it's really about how do you get there?
No, you're so right. I was having a conversation with somebody on Twitter the other day, and we were talking about sort of people, you know, learning in WordPress and all that kind of thing. And I'm of the opinion that I've learned more about development in general and WordPress development and design patterns and all these kind of other things. I've learned more in the last 2 years that I've been, 3 years now, that I've been involved in WordPress than I ever did before. Because in my opinion, at least, most WordPress developers started out as bloggers. So they already have that mindset of sharing their knowledge. So when they figure something out, I mean, I do it. The first thing I do once I figured something out, I just spent about 4 weeks integrating a WordPress plugin with a whole bunch of different APIs. And the way they all work differently and they all authenticate differently and they all do different things. And the first thing that I'm going to do when I'm finished with that project is I'm going to write an article for the next person who's struggling with all of those APIs and how to do it. So we're naturally bloggers. We naturally, you know, you're talking earlier about sharing the screenshots of your plugin and that kind of thing. We naturally want to share that information. And I think that is a huge benefit for being involved in WordPress development.
Yeah, the precedent has been set. And also, you know, people speaking at WordCamps or even just being willing to show up and have conversations to chat through, you know, what's going on with them. And if somebody says, oh, well, I haven't figured out how to do this, you know, everybody loves showing off, but it's in the spirit of being helpful, you know, offering solutions or experience that might be able to help.
No, that's very true. That's very, very true. Then the negative side. So as a WordPress developer, what is the biggest sort of negative or thorn in your side or thing that you've struggled with in the last however many years that you've been doing it?
Technically speaking, you know, WordPress is limited. The database schema is limited because it's not built exactly to solve a lot of the problems that I'm trying to solve. The secret sauce, because it is, you know, let's be honest, right? It started as a blogging platform. It's definitely grown into a pretty powerful CMS. And you can bend it to your will beyond that, but that's what it's designed to do. So the secret sauce, especially offered by a lot of hosting companies, is caching, because CMS blogging implies reading, right? Not necessarily read only, but mostly it's about static content being read, being consumed. As opposed to heavy interaction needed by, you know, if you're building a web app, a lot of the time, a lot of writes as well as reads. So it definitely can fall over. It tacking on e-commerce even. I had experience with a huge e-commerce website a few years ago that, good for them, went through the roof in popularity, but the server started to fall over from the second week, just too much data written into the database that wasn't meant for that kind of data processing. So there are definitely some technical limitations. Like I tend to advocate WordPress as an app platform at the beginning. And so the talk that I give often about building web apps on WordPress emphasizes prototyping or MVP. It can grow with you. There are definitely ways to solve those problems. I've now talked to some, you know, very advanced developers who are running unbelievably robust apps all on WordPress. It can be done. You know, you can keep throwing server power at it. But depending on the scenario, so, you know, usually you reach a point where you're like, okay, well, we're ramping up, you know, this is working great. It's worth the overhead. Let's now go build something custom. You know, even if it's a microservice or whatever, that time usually definitely comes along. So from a technical perspective, and then, you know, people complain about the legacy code. Some of it's, you know, there's a lot of naming inconsistencies. Some of it's, you know, object oriented. Some of it's not. Get over it. It's not that important. You know, there are people who are dogmatic about that. Great, fine, you know, but the rest of us are just trying to get stuff done. The important thing is that it works, you know. So get over it and just deal with it, you know. Take advantage of, like you said, I think the pros outweigh the cons. So settle on that.
Absolutely. It's an interesting topic because I look at it, you know, you talk about the naming inconsistencies and those kind of things. I look at it from the point of view of, I mean, even PHP itself has some of these issues.
Absolutely.
And PHP was knocked by, you know, serious developers for a number of years because of these
issues.
And still is. And the bottom line is, it's the nature of an open source project. It's the nature of a project that has been around for as long as it has been around. You know, whether or not it's the most well-written or the, you know, follows the best patterns or whatever, if you look at PHP as a language, I mean, it is the reason that Facebook is the behemoth that it is today. You know, Facebook built on PHP
is the behemoth that it is today.
Exactly. So yeah, as you say, just get over it. I like that. I think I'm going to make that the title of this podcast. Get over it. I'd like to bring this to a close now. As always, Corey, it's been amazing chatting to you. I actually almost want to have a chat with you once a month just to catch up and hear how it's going. And that'd be great. It's nice. It's always nice to talk to somebody who's in a similar age group, similar experience, similar space. It's lovely talking to you. It's lovely hearing about what's going on. I'm going to wrap up now with what I call my hacking questions. They're very sort of short form. Almost you can one answer them if you will. If you want to go deeper, you're more than welcome to. But if you just have a one word answer, that's also fine.
Okay.
So let's say tomorrow somebody came to you and said, I want to fund, let's say 2 weeks of your time to work on WordPress core, and you could change one thing. What would that be and why?
So here's a very literal answer. It drives me crazy that when you go into the edit post screen, there's a add new button next to, you know, add post. And then there's a little button that says add new or edit post. There's a little button that says add new, right? When you go to the list of posts, there is no button to the archive page. Why there isn't a little button next to, you know, list of all of, you know, you're looking at all of your posts or all of your custom post type or all of your pages. Why isn't there a little button that says go to archive page? Assuming there is one, there are filters and all that kind of stuff. So this is, I've written the plugin a few times, but there are no hooks for adding something there. So you have to use JavaScript. So it's hacky as hell. So it'll never get merged into core because it's hacky as hell and track tickets and nerds with egos and all that kind of stuff. And I, you know, it's not that crucial, but it just drives me crazy whenever I'm working on a normal website with list of posts, list of pages, there is no link to the archive page.
Interesting.
You're clicking through into one to see if I'm right.
Of course I am. That's very interesting. Maybe we can double team on that. I'll create the track ticket that adds the hooks, and then you can do the plugin afterwards.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I think a 10-line plugin that I wrote. I don't think I ever committed it, but it's just one of those simple little things. Like you can from a post, you can, you know, there's already a button. So the pattern is already established. Like there's an action button, but from a post, there's the slug. Why is there there's no slug on the list of posts pages?
Interesting.
There you go.
I never thought
it's
of that.
That little tiny nitpicky thing, but drives me crazy because you have to go find that list, or like if you're building a site, building the design, like, okay, here's the design for a single post. How do you quick get to the archive page? You can't.
So true. We're going to chat about this later. I'm making notes as we speak.
Now that I showed it to you, it's going to drive you crazy.
Now it's
going to
bug me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. So the next question is a very sort of technical question. And I always call these the big four or the WordPress defaults, but PHP, JavaScript, HTML, CSS. So those are the sort of four WordPress default programming languages. Yeah, exactly. Besides those four, what other programming languages are you familiar with?
None.
If any? None. Okay.
I taught myself ASP Classic.
Okay.
Which was my first programming language because I used to be on Windows and there was this little thing built in. So, you know, this is really dating myself, but, you know, Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows ME. And then you, on the other side, you had, what was it? Windows 2000, which was like the server, and the server cost money. And I just had your regular little, you know, Windows machine. It came with PWS, personal server. It was this little app that was initially built into Windows, and then you could download it from Microsoft. That basically, it was like MAMP for Windows before any of that existed. And but it, because it was a Microsoft product, it only supported ASP.NET. And so when I first set out doing this, having no idea what I was doing, but basically just bashing away on my local machine, this was the quickest way that I could get up and running. So I taught myself ASP Classic, which really taught me programming, which was great because it's very syntactically forgiving. And there was a lot of documentation for it at the time. .NET had already come out. I never learned .NET, thankfully. And then at some point switched over to PHP, but I'm old school. So jQuery is absolutely, you know, in my favorite thing just because it's easy and I know it, and I can write a lot of big code with it fairly reliably. So I'm looking forward to little over time, you know, I've adopted SAS for CSS. I'm now like version 3 of Kanban uses Webpack. I'd used Grunt a little bit. So I'm slowly really getting into more of those kinds of advanced front-end web development tools now. And then PHP frameworks, I had learned Zend before getting doubling down on WordPress. I'm still a huge fan of the Slim framework, which is basically a little more than a router. But you can spin up. I mean, you listen to me talk. Everything's about speed, right? Mm-hmm. How fast can I just get to the point of solving the problem? I don't really care about the tech. Sorry, I know this is a tech podcast, but you know, however you can solve the problem the quickest and with some reliability, right? So I love the Slim framework, just for super fast. You know, you need some pages. It's a nice little router. And then my other favorite, since I'm going through my list here, my other favorite library that I even use in my WordPress web apps sometimes is called Redbean PHP. And it's an ORM, but it's a single file ORM. And it's terrifying because it's schemaless. So you create an object, you add attributes, you hit save, it will go into your database, it will create the table, it will create all the columns you need, it'll auto-detect, oh, this is a date, so it'll make it a date field, it'll auto-detect, oh, this is, you know, text, so it'll create a varchar until you put in a big chunk of text, and then it'll automatically change that varchar to a text field. I mean, it's terrifyingly powerful, dead simple, you know, and so little things like if you create a book object, and then the next time you accidentally create a book object, like, and you typo it with three O's, suddenly you've now got a different table called book instead of book. You know, so it's scary, but to be able to just say new book has pages, you know, and it'll create relationships, it'll create attributes, save. Now you've got, you never have to look at the database again. It's so cool for rapid prototyping.
That's cool. I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds very interesting. Awesome. So the next question is more about your sort of day-to-day environment. I'm going to make an assumption. Most of my American interviewees are all on Macs. Are you a Mac guy?
I am.
You are. Okay, great. Specifically, what Mac model are you using at the moment?
Oh, the terrible new MacBook Pro. I loved the MacBook Air. So I was on an 11-inch Air for 5 years or something, but it was really starting to fall over. And the downside of a lot of the new front-end tech is it definitely requires a lot more overhead on your local machine. We're not just writing CMS anymore. It's not just MAMP. You know, now I'm running multiple VirtualBox instances, and, you know, Webpack is watching folders, and so you just, and PHP Storm is watching folders, and so just CPU. So I felt like I needed to upgrade, and I did, but these machines are definitely, you know, Apple is stumbled, and so I'm a little disappointed with it. It does okay until it doesn't.
I've heard that a lot from different people. So yeah, it's interesting.
It's pretty well documented.
And you kind of answered the next few questions, but in terms of development environment, I heard you say Vagrant. And then are you using PHP Storm exclusively?
So I'm a UI guy. And so I am getting better with straightforward terminal commands and stuff like that. But I pretty devout MAMP user until just recently, when I've really been using Local, which was bought by Flywheel. But it's basically it's MAMP, but it's, you know, it's a front end for Vagrant instances, I think. And I really like that because Local is amazing. It has MailHog installed, so, you know, it locks down all email sending, which is always a pain with WordPress, especially doing client work. And the fact that it's, you know, the database is pre-created, there's a one button launch, opens up SQL, that kind of thing. It's really solid. I do use VVV for the occasional client instance, but most of the time these days I'll let Local create a site for me, because they're really disposable that way, but I can see them in a list. I use Terminal for a lot of things, but I usually default to something with a UI.
Cool. Like you said, whatever will get you up and running the quickest.
And that's it.
Absolutely. So. And then your IDE, I heard PHP Storm a while back. Have you been using it for a while now?
Yep. Switched a couple of years ago. I had been using Sublime, but at some point, I think I must have sat down with somebody who was a power user of Sublime, and they set me up with all the packages. And so I found it very powerful, but still found a few things lacking. And then had a coworker who was using PHP Storm, who just basically bullied the entire team into using PHP Storm. And we all were kind of like, yeah, it looks really cool. Like you just don't want to admit it, you know, typical developer pride. But then when he started showing us all the like type ahead and the click through to the, you know, which some of the stuff Sublime does, but you've got to set it up. And I find it not as reliable. PHP Storm, I've definitely seen it slow down a little bit, but the trade-off is all of this. Like it knows everything that you're working on. The fact that you can start bashing away at something in WordPressy, and it'll actually say like, oh, it looks like you're working on a WordPress project. Do you want to link to the code base somewhere so that we can help you autopilot? I mean, it's just intelligent in really, really nice ways. I don't use any of the version control that's built in, but it offers all of that. And I, like everybody else, I feel like I'm using maybe 10 or 20% of what it actually does, certainly not to its full potential, but what a great tool.
Absolutely. I switched, it was about 2 years ago now, I think, and I haven't looked back. Well, as you say, I'm also using about 10%. My favorite feature is just the double shift search functionality.
Yep.
Just double shift start typing, and it's some kind of weird black magic because it knows what I'm thinking somehow. I don't know how it does it, but it knows what I'm thinking.
I've been finding that same thing, like that blew me away, and I started really training myself to just use that all the time. I am finding that it is very slow and unreliable, given that, I mean, okay, understand that my project is probably an exception, right? But I've got a WordPress install. I've got a Kanban plugin that has a Kanban plugin built into it. So I've got a lot of classes. All of my classes start with Kanban, obviously. And then I've also got JavaScript files and PHP files, often that are named similar or the same thing. So it's starting to really struggle with, you know, shift, typing in board. Well, do you want version 2 board? Do you want version 2 PHP or JavaScript board? Do you want version 3 board? Do you want version 3 JavaScript or PHP board or the CSS file called, you know? So probably my fault, but I'm definitely seeing it struggle a bit.
That's interesting. That's interesting to hear. I think I'm fortunate in that most of the time when I'm using PHP Storm, I'm either working in the Laravel project that I work on most of the time. So the naming conventions sort of follow that structure and it's easy to find things. Or I'm working on specific smaller plugins that I don't need to go too deep. So but that's interesting to know. It's something I'll keep an eye out for. Cool. So we reached the million-dollar question. It's the one I answered for myself earlier. It's the one I'm now going to ask you. It's the one I always like to round up my podcast with. If you could go back in time to, and I think if I recall correctly from our previous recording, it was a friend who needed a website and you were looking for how to build this website and whatever the case was. But if you could go back in time to that point in time where you decided to look into how to build websites or become a developer, whatever you want to call it, is there one piece of advice that you would give yourself? And if so, what would that piece of advice be?
Not so much web related, but entrepreneur or artistic or what have you, specifically would be to focus on one thing. And I heard this from Derek Sivers way too late, but he, in at least in hindsight, was happy that he had doubled down on trying to be a musician for 10 years and poured everything into that. And then CD Baby came along and he recognized that he was losing interest in being a musician and gaining interest in building this business. So he said, okay, I'm going to really put being a musician on the back burner, like stop, you know, and I'm sure he still picked up the guitar once in a while, but, so then he focused himself on CD Baby. I really wish that I had done that more. I mean, it has made me a much more diverse person and I've learned a lot of valuable lessons along the way. And, you know, and I've gained a broad spectrum of skills. All great. But it definitely has hurt me in that, you know, the whole, what is it? You know, if you're working on two things, you're half-assing two things instead of whole-assing one thing. Mm-hmm. I really wish that I had whole-assed a lot more things along the way, being a musician in my 20s and focusing more on doing this kind of entrepreneur, you know, SaaS apps and things like that in my 30s, but really doubling down on, you know, finding a killer product and really doubling down on it, or even just finding an average product, but saying, and I do this much more now, where understanding where, like, as soon as I released the V3 beta of Kanban, I said, okay, I'm going to take a break. And I immediately banged out two more web apps, totally unrelated, that I've been wanting to build for ages, just for the fun of it, you know? Mm. But I completely recognize that these are just fun little projects. And so when they reached a point where I was like, okay, I've either solved the problem the way I want to, or they're, it's a working MVP, or it's not, and I'm just done, I was able to go, okay, cool, and put it away, which sometimes is a challenge for my kind of brain that really wants to latch onto a problem and then stay stuck on a problem. But, you know, Kanban has been my focus for 2 or 3 years, which for me is far and away a record as far as focus is concerned. I've always, you know, built something, put it out there, lost interest in solving the problem, or solved the problem, so then I lost interest in it, and so it would languish. And there was even a time period where I put a lot of things out and would like, oh, well, it gets no customers, you know, over a month where I've done no marketing or told nobody, and then I'd pull it offline. And it's like, what are you doing? You know, so mm-hmm. Now if I build something, even if it's rough or MVP or whatever, I sort of commit to myself, like I'll buy the domain for 2 years or 5 years, so that no matter what, it's got to just stay there. And I like that because there's a bunch of projects that I keep coming back to. I have a little productivity timer that I've rebuilt a dozen times and we'll probably rebuild next in React because it's basically like my fun little project to, you know, to learn new tech with, that kind of thing. So I like having those projects out there and I still like that diversity, but I am 100% devoted to Kanban and keep coming back to it because I'm having that focus has made all the difference.
That's very interesting. And I think a great way to end off this chat.
So
until next month. I can't add anything to that. That's really so true and so good to hear. We didn't get a chance to do this last time, so I'm going to give you the opportunity to do it this time. If people want to find you online, where can they get hold of you?
I finally have sort of figured out Twitter, so you can talk to me on Twitter @CoreyMoss. Look in the show notes. I'm pointing downwards as if people can see the video, but in the show notes below me, below this recording, there'll be a link to it. And obviously kanbanwp.com is my main product. But feel free to email me through there. Some of the other web apps that I've built, or just projects or products or, you know, little pages and scripts that I've written are all at gelform.com. I don't blog a lot, but I've got some thoughts there as well. And by all means, you know, click on contact me and send me an email. I'm in my inbox all day, every day, like most of us. But I'm happy to answer any questions that people have.
Awesome. Well, Corey, it's been wonderful talking to you. I've really enjoyed this two-parter. I look forward to having more conversations with you in the future. One of my personal visualization goals is to make it out to WordCamp US 1 year.
So yes, please.
If I know that I'm coming, I'll definitely let you know, and hopefully I get to meet you there, because it's always wonderful. I had the opportunity recently when I went to WordCamp Europe to actually be able to meet some of my podcast interviewees, and that's always nice to have a little bit of a relationship and now actually be able to put, you know, the real person's sort of face to it. So again, thank you for your time.
You feel like the ice is already broken.
Yes.
And so it's great to show up and feel like, you know,
you're like, hey, sort of, how are you doing? And
yeah, exactly. It's a great feeling.
Absolutely. I'll definitely chat to you when I see you online. Our hours overlap slightly, but if you're about and I want to say hi, I definitely will. And I hope we have more conversations. And thank you very much for everything.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
No problem. Well, thank you for reaching out to me in the first place.
You're welcome.